Well, if you want, you can pull up the file itself. That may be more crisp and clear. Can everybody do that?
Yes. I'll look at it later.
Do you want me to share it here? Then we won't see our faces, but I can pull it up and share the PowerPoint on my machine. I think then you can see it.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
Want to try that? Okay.
Yeah, let's try it.
Hold on just a second here. Just open it here. Open it. Oops. Okay, let's see here. Here we go. Can everyone see that?
Yes, okay. That looks great. Okay, well, thanks. We didn't meet last quarter. We did everything by mail and didn't have any particular questions or whatever. So we're going to pick up from here and talk about the second quarter now. And for some of the stuff, may talk about the first quarter too. But we'll have it start off with Sam and Rachel, relatively new portfolio managers who will kind of guide us through most of this. As you'll notice, it's a little bit different presentation. So hopefully kind of keep you all on your toes and be a little bit different than we've seen in the past, a little bit more information and so forth. So I'll just turn it over to Sam from the start.
Yep. Okay. So here on slide one, we have an economic landscape slide, just kind of showing what happened in the second quarter. The second quarter saw most of the lockdowns. It started in the first quarter, but most of it happened in the second. Service industries, brick and mortar retail, restaurant, entertainment, airline, restaurant, or real estate, and other industries all suffered some hardships from these lockdowns, as you know. At the same time, there was parts of the economy such as technology, home improvement, DIY parts, grocery stores, and certain essential retailers experienced a bit of a tailwind from these stay-at-home orders. To get a good snapshot of the economy, the Fed actually made a weekly economic index, which takes 10 different economic indicators, puts them all together, and it allows you to track the economy in more real time without the lag that old measures like GDP. There's a lot of lag, so it's hard to tell what's really going on. But anyway, that index bottomed on April 24th, early in the second quarter. And since then, the economy has been steadily rising. We're still depressed. The unemployment remains high. Small businesses are still having a hard time. The economy is still depressed, but we are recovering. And the market's ahead of this. If you've been paying attention, the market kind of predicted that going along, but that's where we're at with the broad economy. And if we move on to the next slide, we'll see the Treasury yield curve. Since early in the year, there's been a dramatic decrease in interest rates all along the yield curve. But if you look, you can see the shorter maturities took a bit more of a hit than the longer maturities. And a lot of this was backstopped by the Fed. They provided a liquidity backstop. It brought some order to the market earlier in the year. They've also announced that they are going to be buying corporate bonds through ETFs and their own index, and that provided some further stability to the bond market and the corporate bond market in particular. So I think that's about it for that slide. Rachel, if you want to take the next one.
This overarching view of the equity indices reveals negative year-to-date returns, but encouragingly positive returns for quarter two. This is particularly true for the Lipper Midcap, which experienced the greatest upside positivity. The S&P came in at a close second at 20.5%. Sam, whenever you're ready.
If we move on to the next slide, we'll see fixed income index returns. Here's just a bit of a snapshot of how that market played out. We can see the return for the major indexes for both the second quarter and the year to date here. As you can tell, other than the Lipper short-term intermediate investment grade index, all had pretty big declines in the second quarter. But year to date, they're up a little more. And if we move on to the next slide, I believe Rachel's going to take that one.
As the IPS stipulates, this account aims to achieve growth with moderate income. The assets are currently allocated pretty close to the target, nearly spot on, with 70.3 allocated towards equities, 29.4 to fixed income, and 0.3 to the money market. And we're ready for the next one. Thank you.
Is everybody hearing everything okay?
Yes.
Yes.
A lot of feedback.
Okay.
I think there's somebody that's in the room that's not muted.
Is everybody muted?
I'm muted.
Rick, are you using telephone or using audio, computer audio?
Yeah, we're all using computer audio.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Let me hang on just a quick second. How's that?
Seems a lot better.
A lot better?
Yeah, what'd you do?
I moved to another room.
Can you still hear it now?
No, it's 10 times better.
Okay, good. Yeah, we're trying to be together in the same room, a few of us, but it's not working out, so. Yeah, we're on slide six, which basically gets into the fixed income allocation for the account itself. If you look over to the left, it shows the allocation of the whole fixed income category. And as we've always have been for some time, we've been overweighted in the corporate area, but we have been in adding more into the government and treasury sector, and of course, which has been working out a little bit better for us based upon some of the things that have been going on and looking for quality. Off to the right, you look at our rating categories or the ratings of our particular corporate bonds and so forth. The NR, which means not rated, are basically those that are CDs, and of course they're not rated. They have a different rating system and so forth. So that's what the 9.4% is. But as you see, everything's investment grade. As long as it's a BBB and higher, that they're considered investment grade. As compared to most mutual funds and so forth, we're actually a little bit lower on the BBB side, and we did sell a few of those during some of the stuff over the last quarter and trying to buy a little bit more A and AA type paper. On the next slide is the fixed income maturity, the laddering of the various maturities. And of course, as you notice in comparison to the past, we've really extended this out quite a bit. Where our duration previously was probably in the below 3 years is now about 4.5, which is putting us very, very close to what many of the benchmarks are, which was kind of our goal. So we say we have a lot from 22 out to 26 and don't have a whole lot maturing in the next couple of years, which that's pretty good considering where rates are and so forth. But anything that we do have available, we will continue to kind of buy longer term and trying to keep that, you know, that average duration somewhere in the neighborhood of 4.5 to 5 years. on the next slide is the fixed income returns, and this is actually in the Ingersoll portfolio. So you look at agencies and how they did for the second quarter, and as far as for year to date, the portfolio was up about 7.2 for the year. And the benchmark comparing the actual subclass that it invested into the government agencies for the same duration was at 0.6. So we outperformed in the quarter, but we lagged a little bit year to date. In the treasuries, we did really well. The few treasuries that we did have, the portfolio was up 0.26, the benchmark at 0.2. Year to date, we're at 6.7 as compared to 3 for the benchmark. And again, and looking over at CDs real quick, for a change, they usually kind of lag a little bit for some reason. Typically, that's because of those shorter maturities, but we did have a good quarter out of that at 4.2. And year to date, they say it's lagged a little bit, but we gained a little bit of ground in the second quarter. But again, most are allocations to the U.S. corporate. So obviously that's the area you want to focus on mostly, because that'll have the biggest impact on the fixed income returns. The portfolio was up about 5.1 for the quarter as compared to the intermediate corporate benchmark at 4.5. And year to date, we're at 4.3 versus 3.7. So overall, the fixed income did pretty nicely, considering some of the volatility and concerns of liquidity we had, particularly in the March through April range. And then, as Sam pointed out, when the Fed stepped in and started backing up corporates and so forth, that kind of restored some sanity back into the market and liquidity. So we're kind of, as I say, back to normal, so to speak, with spreads and that type of thing. So the performance was really good for the quarter from a fixed income standpoint.
So here on this slide, we see the fund returns. We start with the mid-cap core funds. They returned 29.6%, beating out the Lipper mid-cap core index benchmark by 5.9%. Year-to-date results, while still slightly down on the year, beat the benchmark by 11.3%. Taking a look at mid-cap growth funds over on the right, top right, we can see a strong rebound, yet slightly dragged the Lipper Mid-Cap Growth Index benchmark by 3.4%. For the year, these funds are down 6.6%. We take a look at mid-cap value funds in the bottom left-hand corner there. Returns were not quite as strong as core or growth, but Q2 still came in at 16.4% return. While still down year-to-date, portfolio funds have managed to beat the Lipper Mid-Cap Value Index benchmark by 4.7%, effectively avoiding some downside. And finally, if we take a look at the small cap value funds, unsurprisingly, they had the weakest second quarter of these four. It was a tough time for small caps, with returns of 12.8%, which is still pretty good. They lagged the Lipper Small Cap Value Index benchmark. However, year to date, they're both down 24%. So we came out tied there. If we move on to the next slide, we've got gold-oriented funds as well as the returns of international equities and Pacific equities. Looking at the gold-oriented funds, we only have a very small amount allocated to gold, but it has lagged the Lipper Precious Metals Index benchmark. It's not a super fair comparison because this benchmark has silver, gold, and other precious metals in it. Regardless, in Q2, we had a 13% return, and up year-to-date, pretty well 17.1% still up. So it's a good time to have a little exposure to gold. International equities?
Sam, I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you see a change? Do you think gold has pretty much run its course, or do you still think there's a margin for an increase in gold?
Well, it depends what website you look at. But I don't know. I think it's probably a little upside left. It kind of really depends. It's when the Fed is throwing this much money around, a lot of people are saying it's going to devalue the dollar and people are going to go into gold. But to be honest with you, it's hard to tell really what's going to happen there. But I think it still has some upside left if I had to choose an answer there. does that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Yep. You're welcome. Okay, where was it? International equities. They slightly lagged the Lipper International Fund Index in Q2 with a return of 17.8%, However, they have we have a slight half percentage edge year to date in these equities. Pacific equities, last one here, is comprised solely of the Matthews Pacific Tiger Fund here, so it's only one fund that we have. Posted a 20.4% second quarter return, which lagged the Lipper Pacific Region Fund, but still 20%, 20.4% is not too bad in one quarter. Rachel, I believe you're taking the next one.
Now, this slide allows us to take a look at the equity allocation for the entire portfolio as a whole. You'll notice that the actual amounts are quite close to the target. There is, though, a greater allocation to large cap securities compared to the bottom three tiers, mid, small, and developed market. This is because a greater allocation to large cap securities provides more stability and higher quality in investments. Although the modest allocation to the bottom three categories does provide some growth potential and diversification. And on the next slide, Sam will go into more detail about the equity allocation specifically.
Yeah, this slide's just taken a, we're only considering the equities here, so individual stocks and funds. The previous slide was considering the whole portfolio, just to make this clear. Here we have a quite a high percent, 52.8% to large cap. Like Rachel just said, that provides some stability with big companies, good balance sheets. In a time like this, we kind of wanted to stay more weighted towards large cap. It's a little bit safer play. You could also have pretty even percentage allocated to small cap and mid cap, about 17%. That gives us some more exposure to potential growth and helps out a lot with growth there. Developed markets, we have 11.7%, and this is your international stocks and funds. This helps also get some more growth and diversification efforts, but it also provides a little bit of insurance in case the U.S. market begins to go down for a while or something along those lines. It provides a little bit of diversification and another route. For other there, 0.9%, that's your gold. Your gold fund is 0.9% to that. Okay, moving on. I really believe Rachel's going to take basic materials.
Basic materials is slightly underweight compared to the benchmark, the S&P 500. This is largely because we only have one approved stock for this particular sector. And as such, we aim to limit the exposure to the sector to avoid having an over-concentration to any one particular firm. APD, which is the stock, Air Products and Chemicals, has served the account well, though. You can see from the returns on the right-hand side that there was a slight miss on quarter two, but returns for quarter two were still pretty great. And the year-to-date returns were superior compared to the bench. We're ready for communication services.
All right. We're on communication services. We're slightly underweight in the communication services compared to the S&P due to a limited number of attractive companies in the sector. Most of the companies we feel are either overvalued or they're highly leveraged. However, the firms we do find attractive, we find quite attractive long-term, especially. As a result, returns have been quite good, with the sector returning 18.7% in the second quarter. While this slightly lagged the subclass benchmark in quarter two and year-to-date, largely due to temporary headwinds that a few of the companies are going through, most of this is due to Disney and Verizon. It's not a great time to have theme parks when you can't go to them, but long-term, we think they have a lot. They've got a lot in the tank. Verizon also partnered with Disney. They have ESPN. There's no sports going on, so it's a little bit of a rough patch for them. But I think long term, they have a bright future ahead. So we're pretty excited about the communication sector long term. Rachel, if you want to take the next slide.
Exposure to consumer discretionary comes close, but is somewhat limited to the benchmark allocation. The cyclical nature of this sector warrants some reservation, especially considering that firms in this arena create products that customers view as perceived needs. So this includes things like clothing and cars, fast food, and the like. Returns lagged a bit for the sector, but remain positive for both quarter two and for the year to date. This is highly favorable considering the sensitive nature of the business models and the current economic environment.
Taking a look at consumer staples, we have weight consumer staples heavier than the S&P does in an effort to provide some stability during economic downturns. While the sector has returned 15% in quarter two and handily outpaced the benchmark, we're still down 8% on the year. But again, just like I mentioned earlier, this is due to a couple of companies having some temporary headwinds due to these extreme circumstances, mainly Sysco, they deliver food to restaurants. Obviously, they had a hard time in quarter two doing that with most restaurants being closed. But going forward, we're pretty excited about them. Other firms like McCormick and Clorox, they both did great and helped provide some stability. So pretty happy with the consumer staples in the second quarter as a whole. Moving on to energy next.
The account currently does not own any stocks that operate in the energy sector. The energy sector, despite reopenings across the nation, has not experienced the same amount of recovery we've seen in other sectors. This is widely due to high amounts of supply and low amounts of demand, stemming from stay-at-home measures, social distancing, and people just generally canceling their travel plans and their vacations. The sector also experiences excessive volatility, which can weigh on accounts as well. To protect the account from such volatility, risk, and general uncertainty, we plan to maintain this 0% allocation for the time being.
Healthcare, we are pretty close to the S&P 500 allocation on this, slightly over it. The sector's been quite resilient this year, with investors looking to drug manufacturers to produce vaccine treatments and vaccines for the virus, as well as pharmacies like Walgreens, CVS, seeing a lot of foot traffic mostly during the panic buying earlier in the quarter and even in the first quarter. As a result, the sector has returned 12% during the second quarter, as well as 2.3% year to date. We have what portfolio at 12% and the benchmark at 13.6. Well, I know this is less than some of the other sectors. The first quarter was also better for this sector. So that's, I think, why it's a little skewed here. 12% doesn't look like a whole lot, but the first quarter was good. Year to date was up. Pretty excited about this sector, this healthcare sector. Financial services, Rachel.
An allocation near the benchmark is certainly warranted for financial services. The financials that we have on our approved list and that we use in your account are diverse in what they offer, and they all have healthy balance sheets, which is very important in this particular sector. Despite some year-to-date negativity, quarter two returns were up, and we beat the benchmark in both categories here. Something else to note with financial services is that loss reserves were also boosted in quarter two, which provides some more positivity for this sector as a whole.
Taking a look at industrials, we have quite a bit higher allocation right now when compared to the S&P 500. This is due mainly to purchases of international firms such as Siemens in an effort to diversify, as well as some timely purchases of the newly spun off firms Otis and Carrier, which were both spun off of United Technologies, which was also used to be held in this in the second quarter. So when the spinoff happened, and we saw some what we think is really good value in Carrier and Otis, so we decided to buy some additional positions in them, and that's overweighted the sector for right now. Also, we have firms such as Republic Services, which is waste management, basically. And they're very stable, helps add stability to the portfolio. As you can see, quarter two had 22.4% returns. And we quite handily beat the benchmark. We're still down on the year, but still quite handily beat the benchmark in this sector.
Information technology is a very important sector right now to allocate to, given today's fast-growing, ever-present dependence on technology. So this warrants a nearly 20% allocation. Growth for this sector stems from the Internet of Things, which is essentially the idea that everyday items are more and more becoming quote-unquote smart devices, where they're being embedded with chips. And growth also stems from the rollout of 5G. I know Sam maybe mentioned that earlier. Faster wireless with widespread adoptability will provide a lot of growth for competitors in this sector. We did establish more exposure towards this in April with purchases of ServiceNow and Tyler Technologies. The year-to-date lags from the bench, but strong quarter two returns come very close. And you will notice that the quarter two returns, sorry, Kim, quarter two returns are actually the highest of all sectors. So that just points to the potential that IT has.
All right, taking a look at the real estate sector here, we have the S&P also has a limited allocation to this, but we have an even more limited allocation at 1.8%, mostly because we find the sector in general to be quite unfavorable at this time, mainly due to the oversupplied nature of the industry. How many malls do you need when everything's going online? The overvaluation of the sector stocks and the uncertainty surrounding the tenants' ability to pay rent at this time. You know, if your shop's closed, you don't have money, can you pay rent? It's just not a great time, we think, for this sector. So that's why we've limited our exposure to it. For the quarter, it's done quite well, 19.8%, but year to date, down 24.8%, and even the benchmark's down 8.5%. And they have a lot more of a diversification into real estate than we do, and still down 8.5%. So we think it was a good decision to limit the exposure here to real estate. Okay, and then on to the last one, utilities.
Utilities provide stability and slow growth in almost all conditions. These firms are resistant to recessions given the nature of the products and services they provide. Like for example, the stocks here provide water and electricity. Even in a recession environment, consumers still need water and they still need electricity. With that said, returns were superior compared to the bench for both the year and for the quarter. So we're very happy with the overweight in utilities. Okay. This slide is a basic summary of the back testing we performed on the U.S. and developed market portfolios. These were tested separately and revealed supportive results to the portfolios. In terms of the large cap U.S. stock portfolio, it tends to have a slightly defensive allocation, which provides some more downside protection. The developed market portfolio helps the account harness increasing amounts of interconnectivity in the business world. And as we mentioned before, it helps diversify risk and revenue streams. So if something goes down in the US and we see a revenue dip here, then a firm based outside of the US may not feel that impact wherever they're headquartered. So that is the benefit that having that international exposure provides. Both of the portfolios outperformed their respective benchmark, and their key metrics revealed that Both portfolios move less than the overall market and perform better on a risk-adjusted basis compared to the benchmark. And on to the returns.
Okay, here on the meat and potatoes of the whole thing, we have the total portfolio returns, net of fees. Both of these are net of fees. This includes the fixed income and the equities, whole portfolio. As you can see, we have the subclass blended benchmark on the top and the class blended benchmark on the bottom. First, let's take a look at the blended subclass benchmark on the top. We think this subclass better represents the portfolio allocation toward mid-cap, small-cap, and emerging markets than the blended class benchmark does. Year-to-date, the portfolio is down 4.3%, slightly edging out the blended subclass benchmark that is down 4.5%. In the second quarter, however, it has been quite good with the returns of 14.1%, beating the subclass blended benchmark's 13.8%. If we take a look at the class blended on the bottom, year-to-date we have lagged the benchmark, but during the second quarter, a return of 14.1% bested the benchmark by about a half percent. Pretty good for the times, especially. I think Rachel, if you want to take the next one.
So now we'll just take a look into, looking at what the portfolio achieves, analyzing how it compares to the IPS agreement. So with our first bullet point here, we should note that deviations from target amounts have been kept to a minimum. So we are effectively keeping investments where they were stipulated in the investment policy statement. Individual bonds, as Rick mentioned earlier, are all investment grade, but also there's a majority allocation towards A or better rated bonds. So this allows for high quality of fixed income investments. Rick also mentioned earlier, maturities have been extended this quarter, which is great because it leads us closer to our target average maturity of 5 to 7 years. And just moving right along, more on the equity side, as we noted before, there's a majority allocation to large cap stocks, which helps establish quality and stability. Large cap stocks tend to experience a little bit less risk considering that they are mature companies. And our extensive investment selection and monitoring process does allow the account to avoid some unfavorable industries and areas that maybe have a little bit more risk than we want to take on. A great example of this is the energy sector that we discussed earlier. Just given the fundamentals surrounding that sector, we've just chosen not to expose the account there. And then back testing, as we touched on a bit before, reveals that the portfolio is, in terms of the risk and reward relationship, it's plotted favorably, meaning that the portfolio achieves solid returns for a low amount of risk.
Always helps to turn on the talking button there. Any questions or comments? I don't know if Kim, you want to pull up the transaction report, share it.
Okay, that one I didn't have ready. Just bear with me a minute. Let's see if I can find that.
Yeah, and that's fine. If you can, I'm just going to point out a couple quick things. Of course, we always provide the holdings report, which I won't cover anything in that. To Rolf's point earlier, of course, we've had the gold in the portfolio all the way back till it's been actually 5 years it's been in the portfolio, and always given to selling it at sometimes, but like I say, as goofy as things are right now, it's kind of nice to have a little position in something like that. I mean, it's not dramatic, but you know, at least it's something, and it's up about 60% over the last 5 years. So, you know, like I say, we'll probably be hanging on to that for a little bit longer.
There we go. How's that?
Well, you're really good at this, Kim.
Not pulled up so many attachments before, so bear with me.
Yes. Yeah, you want to scroll down to page 5. That shows a lot of purchases throughout that time, which is probably maybe a little more than we normally do. But what's interesting, and I went back and looked, and of course we try to keep tabs of this as we go along, but a lot of those purchases were made. You notice they're like May 18th and 19th. There was some early in May, some in late April. Those are all the times that, as this market's been going back up from its bottom, there was some corrections happening, but they were very sharp and quick. So when that happened, you know, we try to take advantage of that. I think that's, you know, partially what helped us a little bit too on the performance. And I think too, in buying some of those fixed income things before rates really got out of hand and started getting really low. Below that, just you see when the sales, there's two there, just to point those out. Those two, Ford Motor Company, which in similar to well, was comments have been made earlier, because obviously it's not going to be a great time period for car dealers and so forth and car manufacturers. The bond actually went from investment grade to below investment grade. And some of this stuff started after Saudi Arabia and Russia had their little problems back in March. And that's kind of when this ball started rolling. Of course, COVID-19 came around and made things even worse. But there was some liquidity issues in the corporate market. And, we had to make a little effort to kind of get that thing sold and say, as we took a loss on it, but we just felt that we needed to, you know, we didn't want the lower rated bonds, and that's part of the policy that we're supposed to follow. So, so it was gone, and that worked out fine. And we think longer term, it's going to be a good place to be. Not necessarily that Ford go out of business, but of course, anything's possible anymore. But because of how it was structured and so forth, we didn't want to wait another year and kind of see what happened. So we decided to go ahead and pull the trigger. And you may remember Teva, it's a small position, but that was finally, we decided to go ahead and just chuck that one. It was the only one we had that was just below investment grade. But it was a good company and stuff. But we thought, well, we just clean house and make sure anything that had a possibility of falling below investment grade, that we wouldn't have it. So that's kind of the main thing I wanted to point out with that, just that we were, you know, making sure the portfolio was of quality. And at this point, don't really feel like there's any other changes to be made. We're going to do our usual stuff. There's a few things we want to kind of rebalance on a couple things and revisit some sectors, as Sam and Rachel was talking about. And like I say, with fixed income, just trying to extend out a little bit more on the maturities and realizing that probably interest rates are going to stay down for a little while. So, any questions on that? Okay. I don't think we have anything else to bring up. I know as far as from this way this account works, our magic number is 5.8 million. That's the number that we will fall off on December 31st of this year. So obviously we want something larger than that. Interestingly enough, despite all the stuff that's been going on, that's about where the portfolio is today. It's down about 4% roughly, I think it's been mentioning year to date. Of course, we did distributions today, so there's 300 some thousand that's going out. So that'll make a little bit of an impact. But again, we're trying to be sure we're kind of getting to that point by the end of the year. But, you know, the first 6 months this year was interesting. I'm sure the next 6 months going to be just as interesting too. But I know that's something we're striving for, and we hope we can, get that pulled off by the end of the year. If there's nothing else, I guess we're done. Did you get everything recorded, Kim?
Oh, I think so. We're still going. Just seeing if there are any questions. Yeah.
So if you want anything recorded, now's the time to say it. What'd you think of the presentation? As far as the format and so forth. Better? I'll take silences, yes. But we always do appreciate your feedback. So, you know, let us know. But say I know Sam and Rachel did a lot of work in revamping the presentation to have a little bit more colorful and interesting and, you know, right down to the meat of things. So thought it did a great job. And, you know, we'll probably kind of stick with this kind of format. But, you know, if anybody's got any questions or comments or feedback or anything afterwards, you know, you know how to get in touch with us. Just let us know. That we do appreciate y'all, and you know, everybody stay safe and things go well. I know Rolf, you don't have much going on right now here in the summer, right? Hey Rolf.
Yeah.
I was saying that you didn't have much going on this summer and everything, you know, things are just kind of back to normal for you, I guess, right?
Oh yeah, it's back to normal. Typical day.
Well, it's going to make that last year really fun for you.
Oh, yeah. If it wasn't a challenge, it wouldn't be fun.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, we know you'll do a good job, so we'll keep our fingers crossed for you.
Okay. Appreciate it.
All right. If there's nothing else, I guess we're done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you.